maybe that Alicia Keys song, Superwoman, strikes a chord with our next guest, University of Maryland professor Sherry Parks, whose new book looks at and explores the benefits and the pitfalls of that cultural icon, the strong black woman. The book is called Fierce Angels, and Dr. Parks joins me now. Welcome to WNYC. Hello.
Thanks for having me.
How would you define the superwoman or fierce angel icon?
Well, there are a couple of ones. There are real black women who shoulder the role, but there's also a larger mythological role that has come through a number of cultures where she really is the super hero woman who saves everybody in her arena. So she is strong and nurturing, which is something that doesn't occur very much in Western culture.
And is this something that you want to reinforce to some degree, but also explode as a myth on another level?
I'm trying to give women the information they need to decide whether or not they take on the role, but they need to take it on consciously. But also I want to explain to other readers that this is something that has been done to women of all races, that it's the images have been taken from women who are non-black and loaded onto the backs of black women. So it's been used to do a number on women of all races.
What's an example of an image like that?
Of which one?
That's been taken from non-black women and put on them.
Okay. Well, you can go, and the book does go all the way back into ancient mythology, and you can see in the most ancient cultures that all women were perceived as having the ability to be nurturing and compassionate. And as paternalization happened, women's images were made weaker and more fragile. And in Greek mythology, for instance, at some point, Hesiod tells us that Night is the only goddess at whom Zeus is in awe of. But before that, goddesses had all been strong and nurturing, was loaded on. And then you can look again in Victorian America, where you have that idealized a Victorian woman who is fragile, but she is only fragile because all of the dirty work, and both senses of that word, have been loaded onto the black slave woman in the South. So, and we see that over and over again. There are lots of movies where there's a black sidekick who is the strong, sassy one and takes on the role of telling off the boyfriend or running away the bad guys, while the young white woman can remain the sexual object in the film.
Listeners, we'd love to hear from you on this. If you're an African-American woman, have you assumed this superwoman mantle? Is it an image that you embrace, that you struggle with, that you've thought about in any way? Call us and talk to Sherry Parks, author of the book Fierce Angels, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Were there some prototypical fierce angels who were models for you, individual women?
Well, in my life, certainly. The book is dedicated to my mother, because my mother, and there are many, many black women who take on this role in African-American culture, who protect their children and nurture them at the same time. I recount this story in the book. I was at a gathering of black professionals, and they began to tell stories about women in their lives who at some point had redirected the plans that the culture had for them. They had been put in voc ed or remedial education, and the mother, it's almost this prototypical story where the black mother goes to the school and says, not my child. So there's a motif that runs through African-American culture. And certainly my mother, and I have a sister now who is older than I am, who fits this model. It's a very expensive model. While I'm praising it, it's something that women suffer for if they take it on in the way it is often taken on.
Suffer how?
It's an exhausting model. The idea that you are supposed to take care of everybody else but not yourself is the way it is often spoken of in African-American culture. And certainly that's the way that role is celebrated in the larger culture. Here's a woman who is smart, who is strong, who can take on enemies, who can vanquish enemies, but she is not supposed to do it for herself. And African-American women, many of whom that I interviewed, said we're not supposed to think about ourselves. But, of course, that leads to stress and exhaustion and actually stress-related disease.
Latasha in Patterson, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What are you thinking about?
I just wanted to remark, I'm in my mid-30s, and many of my friends and I, we have adopted this superwoman role almost like by accident, because many of my friends, my parents were married, but many of my friends' parents weren't married, so they just kind of assumed the role of caregiver in their families as we entered our late teens and 20s as their brothers started to into the world of drugs and criminal activity and so forth. So they became the absent males in the community. And I just see it now happening over again, the generation where they're repeating what their mothers did, being the breadwinner, the caretakers in the home, and everything else. And I just like a response to that.
Dr. Parks?
Well, the women I interviewed were asked, how did you learn this role? These were women who self-identified as Fierce Angels. And they said, I don't know where I learned it. Maybe it's in my DNA. They could not remember a time when they did not have this expectation. And notice what Tasha said. The African-American family is often much tougher on its girls than it is on its boys. The girls are expected to take on family responsibility. It is the African-American version of the prince versus the princess. Here, the prince is relieved of a certain amount of responsibility, and all of that gets loaded onto the girl.
And thank you for your call. Let's go to another caller, Cece in Brooklyn. Cece, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
Interesting conversation. I was telling the other young lady, you know, as an African-American female born here in New York City, I don't know anything else but to be that super woman. You know, like, we're expected to tell, my friends expect me to tell them the truth, to tell them, you know, whether it's good or bad or in between. They expect me to tell them what it is. They pretty much expect me to slap them and hug them at the same time because, you know, they look to us to say, you know, you're right about that. And, you know, and we take on things like sponges because we don't know anything else. I mean, my mother raised me and my brother with my father. We were a family unit of four, and my dad, you know, he earned the bread, and my mom took care of the household. But when things needed to get done, you know, we looked to grandma, you know, on both sides, my father's mother and my mother's mother.
Dr. Parks, how many times have you heard that story?
Well, I've heard lots of different versions of it, but notice, well, you know, what she's speaking of and what you're speaking of is that there's an enormous amount of strength in this image. And so we're at a point where African-American women have to decide what we want to do with this model. That idea that there's only one role and this is the only one we have is very culturally consistent. And I want African-American women to think about this. This started out as a very academic book, and black women were coming up to me saying, no, people have to read this. Mm. Folks come up to me in tears saying, you have just explained my life to me. Now I understand why I am so tired. I'm not saying that African-American women should throw this away. I'm simply trying to provide them the information so that they can make some conscious choices and decide what to do with the power that comes with it.
You write about Michelle Obama and the angry black woman flip side of this image that she had to deal with during the campaign, maybe not so much since the election. Where does that come in?
Well, Michelle Obama is not an angry black woman, I have to say that. But the label got loaded onto her by the people who were running against her husband. He was not an easy target, so they turned to her. And at first, many African-American women who were writing about this were confused because they said, where's the anger? We don't see the anger. The label was enough. It's a familiar enough label that all they had to do was say, she is angry, and suddenly it was something that the campaign had to contend with. That the title of that chapter, which I love, is borrowed from a blog called The Angry Black Woman. And it was the title she ran right after the Michelle Obama incidents began to occur. And she said, you say angry like it's a bad thing. And the idea that when I talk about the strong black woman and she talks about the angry black woman, we really are talking about the same thing. That anger, when necessary, is a good thing. But notice in traditional Western culture, we have the idea that women are not supposed to be angry. Mm-hmm. We have words for angry women. And the African-American woman actually does have a lot of emotional freedom. to be angry when necessary. And the chapter ends with some stories that white women were telling about angry black women who came to their defense. And that idea that there's that responsibility for the black woman to protect other women, which has meaning not only for black women, but obviously has meaning for women of other races.
Interesting. Marie in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Sherry Parks. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm calling because I'm a black woman who finds that that most of the stereotypes of this kind of angry black woman or strong black woman, I think, are being perpetuated mostly in the black community, in my experience, in that I found that black men found, I've been told by black men that I was intimidating or not approachable or aggressive, and that those were not admirable qualities. And I'm actually married to a white man who finds the strength in my character to be one of the most beautiful things about me, and thinks that that's what makes me such a wonderful human being. And I've never been made to apologize for being a strong woman, to being a defensive mother, to being a defensive wife, and not defensive in an aggressive way, but defensive in a way that makes me, you know, the head, a member of my household, the protector of my household. And I just find that maybe we're projecting a little too much about where this myth originates, and we're not looking inwardly in terms of how are we self-perpetuating or self-fulfilling some of these myths about what black women are supposed to be and how we're supposed to behave and our perceptions in our own community.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Parks, complicated thought.
Well, yes, and I'm using myth in a different way. There are two definitions of myth, and I'm sorry, I'm going to be a professor for a second. There's myth as fake story, and certainly stereotypes are fake stories, and then there's mythology as the stories that a culture tells itself that go down through the generations. There is a backlash against this woman within the black community. Essentially, what happens is that in West Africa, the pre-colonial gender roles are pretty well prescribed, where the woman takes care of the domestic sphere and the man takes care of the village. Slavery sliced off the village role of the man. So now, particularly in middle-class African-American culture, when African-American men look to be men in the Western sense of the word, there's also this tension in Jewish cultures, for instance, where there's this woman whose role has been very public and very strong, but in order to approach Western patriarchy, they think these women are in the way, and you get this backlash within it. Within working-class black culture, you don't see quite so much of it because the women are very necessary. I asked a number of black men, what would happen if black women just stopped doing what they did? And I had difficulty getting an answer because they said, well, she wouldn't do that. She wouldn't do that. So there's this love-hate relationship, and you can see it very often in writings by black men where they love their mamas and their grandmamas, but they are worried if their wives take on this role.
Sherry Parks. She is an associate professor in the American Studies Department at the University of Maryland, College Park. And you've really started a discussion here. We could go on for hours with this, with all the callers that we have. Her book is Fierce Angels, The Strong Black Woman in American Life and Culture. Thank you so much for joining us and starting this discussion.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And finally today, congratulations to high school athlete Nathan Lehrer, my son, who pitched a perfect game yesterday for his school's baseball team in the public school athletic league. 5 perfect innings, 10 strikeouts before the mercy rule kicked in their 19-0 victory. Nathan celebrated last night by eating Indian food and studying for a big math test, which he is taking right now, and which doesn't get canceled just because of some athletic feat. Congratulations, Nathan. Lisa Allison, Jody Avergun, Paige Cowett, Alan Smith, and Eileen Markey produced this program. Our senior producer is Megan Ryan. We had intern help today from Amanda Magnus and Sydney Beveridge, and that's Debbie Fountain at the audio controls. Talk to you tomorrow. I'm Nathan's father.